HRNradio.com, where positive people and podcasts unite.
Hi there. Hi there. This is Sally Kirkland, and I have with me today Laren Bright, who I've known for years and years and years, and who is just a wonderful three-time Emmy Award nominee for his work at Hanna-Barbera and other companies. And also, in the movement of spiritual inner awareness, my idea of one of the most extraordinary ministers. Hi, Laren.
Hi, Sally. Thank you very much.
Yeah. I thought today I was going through, I have three libraries. I was going through all of them and pulling out books of John Roger. And thinking that I would just put a marker and all that. There's one's called Timeless Wisdoms, The Way Out Book, The Tao of Spirit, We Give the Love, Forgiveness, The Key of the Kingdom, The Path of Mastership. On and on. You Can't Afford the Luxury of a Negative Thought. And I thought I would just, you know, pick some lines and then you improvise whatever you want to say about it.
Okay. I mean, I'm glad to share what I understand about it. It doesn't mean it's what John Roger meant by what he was saying, but,
right.
But I'll
right.
talk from my experience and we'll
your
see where
experience.
It goes.
That's what it's all about, your experience.
Yeah.
So on page 27 of Timeless Wisdom, he says, when you direct yourself towards the expression of the Christ, you have the Christ consciousness on your side. If you go against it, you have a lot of nothing on your side. So know that you are the only one who can delay or block your progress. You're the only one who can cloud your awareness. By the same token, you're the only one who can recognize the Christ within. You are the one who can make the Christ a living reality in your life and who can demonstrate the unconditional loving and forgiveness that indicate the presence of the Christ. What do you think?
Wow. I mean, well, there's so much... There's just so much in that, you know, to look at. I mean, well, for, you know, first of all, the first thing that comes to my mind is that I think one of the principles that John Roger's talking about there is that we're responsible for our experience, for our own inner experience. I mean, we're to some extent responsible for our outer experience because it's, you know, life isn't so much about what goes on around us as much as what we do with what goes on around us. And, you know, at some point, I suppose, whether it's in this incarnation or another, you know, all of us come to this place, and probably many lifetimes, I guess, you know, but where we come to this place of saying, okay, you know, I see the outer world, I get whatever enjoyment you know, it has to offer, and I mean, it's neat and it's fun, but there's got to be more than this. And then we turn inwardly. And for us at this time, the way I understand it is that one of the templates, I guess I would call it, you know, for reaching inside and into higher levels inside of us and outside of us, you know, the model for that is Jesus the Christ, and I think one of the things that John Roger pretty consistently talks about is it doesn't matter what you call it. You know, for people from, you know, like I guess what I would say the Judeo-Christian approach, it would be called the Christ. But you know, it's interesting. Over the weekend, a young man friend of mine. Died. Well, he died last week, and over the weekend there was a funeral, and this fellow was involved in MSIA and was a Muslim. And for the first time in my life, I got to go to a Muslim funeral ceremony, mosque.
Yeah.
It was, you know, in a mortuary attached to a mosque. And it was an amazing experience, and I felt what I identified from with my label as the Christ very present there in what they're doing. So the point being that it doesn't matter what name you put on it. There's a spiritual energy that transcends you know all the labels and all the stuff that we put on it here in the physical world. And is really pure essence of spirit. So, you know, call it Buddha or call it Allah or call it...
Moses.
You know, the Christ, whatever you want to call it. That's the thing I think we're all looking for. It's just funny to me in a way, and I'm kind of just rambling here, but it's just funny to me in a way how when religions form around this pure essence of spirit, I guess it's just the nature of the physical material world, but they start putting rules and regulations on it and create separation among the beliefs about this thing that is in all religions, the spirit. Loving, you know, I mean, another way of describing it is loving, and so in their attempt to I guess define it in a way that people's minds can grasp or whatever, it creates a separation from the very thing that's there to let us know that we're all connected, we're all one. Anyway, let's see what more I got out of what that thing. Oh, so all right. So and getting back to the point of John Rogers saying that it's our responsibility. You know, one of the other things I've heard John Rogers say many times is God is intention, and that's a statement that I don't know that I fully understand, but I get glimpses into aspects of what I think that means, and I think when we set the intention of having the experience, that opens the door to having that experience. And so that's, I think, another way of how we create our reality. Not that we can, by what we think or what we intend, create the actions that happen in the world, but it certainly creates the way we receive them and the way we interact with them. So,
okay.
Anyway, that's at the moment, that's what I got from what you just read.
Right. And, okay, cool. I'm going to just flip through to another page.
Okay.
See what I have. Let's talk about riches.
Riches.
He says, right. Riches may represent dollars, but they might not. It may be that you are rich in friends, or your riches may be in your health, in your family, in your society, and nothing is as good as health, as the wealth of health and the happiness of health. When you hit that, the riches of the world mean nothing. Jesus said it this way, do not store up for yourself treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourself treasures in heaven, where moth and rust do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal, in Matthew chapter 6, 19-20.
You know, that's a really interesting one that you picked, because, you know, back about 1969, when I first came in contact with John Roger, one of the things I heard him say then and over the years that I'm only now beginning to recognize how accurate he was talking about how money is king, money is worshipped on this planet at this time, and you know what I think the opportunity is. Well, first of all, let's just say this. John Roger, one of the things that John Roger talked about that we are all heir to, everybody on the planet, is health, wealth, and happiness, prosperity, abundance, and riches, loving, caring, sharing, and touching. And you notice that, you know, this prosperity, abundance, and riches is a third of those nine, well, I guess ten, things.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like, to me, if this planet is a classroom, for us as souls to come in and have experiences, neither, you know, good nor bad, they're just experiences. If we decide they're good or bad, that's the labeling we put on them. That's not what they are inherently. You know, in essence, everything is just an experience. And the experience, the classroom that we seem to be in this time around is money. And to a certain extent, I think that the way this works is that we have an opportunity to see how money is not the end. It can be a means to an end, but it's not the end product of what we're after. And I think in our current times, I think we have taken this to a huge extreme where today much of what it looks like, based on what I'm reading, which is not by any means definitive, but it's one definition of what's going on in the world, it's that profits are more important than people. And I personally question that. I mean, I think profits and money is really neat, but I think we've gone to an extreme. I mean, when how do you determine that the value of one person is worth hundreds of times the value of another person? I mean, that just seems like it's sort of out of whack to me. So, you know, I think in the midst of this philosophy of money is king or money is God or whatever, however you want to put it, money is the end-all be-all, we have an opportunity to experience that we can have fulfillment through, as John Rogers was saying, through riches of friends, through good health. You know, I mean, I don't care how much money you got. If you don't feel well, you know, your money isn't worth crap. So, or at least let me just say, you can't get the enjoyment out of your money that is available to you. And then, you know, another question comes is how much money is enough? And the other thing I've heard J.R. say is, you know, that we are, that Spirit provides us with all our needs. You know, may not provide us with everything we want, but it certainly provides us with all our needs. So how much money do you need to get more than what you need? That's kind of, how much money do you really have to have to get to have more, to have all the experiences, you know, that you want, that are in addition to the experiences that you really need, which are being already supplied. So, you know, I mean, wealth is a relative thing to me. And you know, in my own life, I've had times where I've made more money than I wanted to spend at any given time. And I've had times when I wasn't making enough to have the things that I felt like I wanted at that time. But overall, you know, I have found wealth in a lot of other areas besides money. And I think, you know, gratitude comes into that. It's like when the things that I find I'm grateful for, you know, are not necessarily connected with money. Some are. I mean, I'm just really grateful that I currently have enough to pay my bills. And that's just awesome to me. And I'm very appreciative of that, you know. But you know, when even at times when I wasn't making enough to cover my bills, there were times when I was having fun.
Right.
So, you know, what's wealth? I don't know. I guess you have to decide it for your own self based on your own karma and what it is you came into to experience.
And can you talk a little bit about tithing and seeding?
Yeah, you know, first of all, I don't know that much about seeding. I know a little bit about tithing. Tithing is giving 10% of your increase to the source of your spiritual nourishment or upliftment, whatever it is. Of all the things I guess that were presented in the Bible, this one is really clear and really specific. 10% of your increase to the source of your spiritual teaching. And why do you do that? See, I mean, I think it's too easy to assume that was a control mechanism used by some religions to make sure that they had wealth. And maybe it is. But I don't think that was the original intention. And I can tell you, interestingly, that when I started tithing to my source of what I recognize as a source of my spiritual nourishment or spiritual things inside of me in a positive way. And I remember I went to a meeting. With our church, MSI, the Movement of Spiritual Inner Awareness, I went to a meeting. We were supposedly going to be discussing creating a people center, a center for the church, and where people could live and learn and grow and all that stuff. And somehow, in the middle of that meeting, the discussion turned to tithing. And I at that time didn't have a lot of income, but I was donating a lot of time to the church. And the more they talked about this 10% business, the angrier I got. And I'm saying, well, I'm going to send them a bill for my volunteer service, and then say, but I'm donating it, so there's my tithe, because I didn't see that I could donate 10% of my income. And I went home and I walked in the house and said to my wife, that meeting turned into a meeting about tithing. I'm really angry. I think I have to start tithing. And I did. And a lot of times I find the things that make me the angriest are the things that are the seed of my learning and growing and enhancement, personal enhancement. So anyway, at that time I started tithing. And it was weird because I found that even though I was giving 10% of my income, I seemed to have more disposable income than I had had before when I wasn't giving a whole 10%. And then my daughter who grew up my wife and I had been involved with the movement for her entire life. And
your daughter?
My daughter, yeah.
Yeah.
And she's 38 now. And she never really followed the church the way that we did, but she had her own kind of connection with it. But she married this guy who was also involved with the church, and one of the things that he insisted on was tithing. And she somehow got that from him, that was a valuable thing, and she started doing it. And her life started to change. I mean, her financial life started to change. And she will tell you today that is one of the things in her life that's not negotiable with herself. That is something that she does. And she's just found great value to it. You know, another aspect that I'd heard people describe about with tithing is when you tithe, that gives yourself a message that I have enough, that I can share it. Now, I don't know what other churches do with their tithing money, but I can tell you that our church, the mission of our church is to make the teachings of soul transcendence available to those who are looking for them. Not to sell them to anybody or push them on anybody, but just to make them available so that people who are looking can find it. And so that's what my tithing goes for. And, you know, the way the church does that is, in my opinion, it really first-class ways of presenting these teachings. And John Rogers' 60-some-odd books and John Morton's books, you know, and the materials, the study materials that they put out, I mean, they're really...
MSIA.org.
Yeah, you can learn about that at www.msia.org. Anyway, so, I mean, that's my story with tithing. I mean, I just find it very valuable, and for me also, it's non-negotiable. I also understand that, you know, people that aren't capable or don't have the financial income to be able to tithe 10%, you start at 1%. And at least you show your intention, you know, to be giving back to the source of everything that we have anyway, being God. So, anybody can do it. It's just so interesting to me, too, because, like I say, it's so simple, so clear, and so direct, and yet people find ways to fiddle with it to their own advantage, which to me is like just shooting yourself in your foot. I mean, people say, well, I don't give 10% regularly, but I generously donate. Well, that's fantastic. I mean, I just think that's awesome. And that's not tithing. That's donating, you know. So, anyway, that's the way I understand tithing, and You know, that's certainly not unique to MSIA at all, by any, you know, sense, any shape or form, because, and certainly not everybody in MSIA tithes, I'm aware of that. But I think those that do would tell you that they get a lot of value from it.
Well, thank you for that. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with Lauren Bright.
Timeless information for your self-care and health. HRNradio.com.
Hi there, this is Sally Kirkland, back with Lauren Bright, and I'm arbitrarily going through the same book, trying to just pick a page.
We were going to talk about seeding, yes?
About what?
Seeding.
Oh, seeding, yes. Tell me about seeding.
Yeah, all right. Well, this one I'm going to have to go, I'm going to have to stretch into this one. Seeding is an interesting concept. The way it was described to me is, where tithing is giving out of gratitude for what you got, seeding is preparing the ground for what you want. So, and the way that works is, it's pretty different from tithing. Seeding, you know, is voluntary whenever you want. If there's something you want, you seed for it. And the way you do it is you donate whatever amount to, again, to the source of your spiritual teaching or upliftment or nourishment or whatever. And the interesting thing that I've observed about seeding is that it's not the amount that matters. It's almost like you set an intention, and then you, by giving money to God through the source of your spiritual teaching, that nurtures the intention. It puts it into action. And like you say, the amount doesn't matter. I mean, I've seen John Morton, who's the spiritual director of MSIA. I've seen him seed a penny. And I had a friend, actually a woman I was seeing for counseling, who at times would say, well, if you want that, you know, seed every day. It doesn't have to be a lot. You know, a nickel, a dime, a quarter, you know, whatever. And I've also seen people seed $1,000. I mean, you know, it's like you don't have to limit it or limit yourself by considering an amount. But you kind of go inside and you figure what the amount is. And you can seed for anything. I mean, you can seed for a good medical exam, you know, or you can seed for getting the job that you want. Or you can seed for a relationship, or you can, you know, whatever it is that you think you want. And you put it in the light for the highest good. We've talked about that in past shows. And then you make your donation. And what I've done with these little donations, I mean, little seeds, if I decided I wanted to seed every day, maybe I would seed a dime or something like that every day, and I would just, you know, there's no really process for it other than saying, you know, I'm seeding for, and then, you know, I'm seeding for a great relationship, and maybe be a little more specific. And then I would put the dime in a jar, and when I got enough money in the jar to make it worthwhile, I would write a check and send it off. And you can seed for other people too. You can, you know, if somebody's gone through a tough time, you can seed for, you know, for them to have strength or courage or, you know, or comfort or whatever you want. And with MSIA, I mean, if you want to, you can get these little cards that you can send to people saying a seed has been, it says something like a seed has been planted in your name with God. And that way the person knows they have that kind of support going for them. But seeding, like you say, is an interesting process. And it's one of those things in the practical spirituality approach of MSIA. It's one of those things you can test because, you know, you can. Seeding doesn't guarantee you're going to get what you want because your own karma comes into play with that also. You know, but if it's neutral, if it doesn't matter whether you get it or not, I think seeding maximizes the likelihood that you will. And I mean, at the very least, you know, seeding causes you to sit and think, what do I really want? And maybe get specific about it. And you know, once you put that stuff out to the universe, and then you put the seed on it, and then you start you take action towards it, because the universe rewards action, not thought. You know, it's kind of a combo that maximizes the likelihood that you're going to get what it is that you want. You know, I mean, and at the same time, you know, if it's not aligned with what's for your highest good in this lifetime, you probably won't get it. And there was another thing in there, and I lost it. Oh, and if it's impractical, if it's just not something, you know, if I want to learn to fly without an airplane, and I want to just in my body fly, you may or may not get that. That may not be a practical thing, you know. So, but anyway, it's a neat technique, and it's just another way that we get to play with the physical material world.
I know that in the past, I guess 6 years, I've had two major surgeries. One when I fractured my ankle and the bone was sticking out, and they said they'd never seen a wood fracture. And the other, and of course I had metal and screws and all that, and the other when I had a titanium knee put in.
Mm-hmm.
And just excruciating pain. And I asked everyone I knew to feed for me.
Uh-huh.
And people would send me letters and notes saying that they had seeded for me. And I swear to God, miracles happen.
Yeah.
The minute there was this whole seeding thing going on, I felt viscerally that the pain was lessened and finally gone.
Wow.
Amazing. So there's a wonderful book that J.R. wrote called Spiritual Warrior, The Art of Spiritual Living. And I just noticed by accident that there's a quote from me in the front. It says, I said, I love Spiritual Warrior. John Roger redefines dedication, commitment, cooperation, enthusiasm, and empathy. He encourages us to be heroic warriors of love in our own lives and to win to the benefit of all, complete with material success and spiritual fulfillment. We learn to turn chaos into creativity, negative fantasy into divine imagination, to own the mammal Spiritual Warrior and to share it. It's brilliant. And then I just happened to turn to a page where it says, the most difficult thing about being a spiritual warrior is confronting yourself. It's in those moments when you are free from the distractions of the physical world that you have the greatest chance for upliftment. Take every chance you get, because you will live in this world, get married, have kids, spend your life in slavery to car payments and house payments, work 8 hours a day and die. And you can take none of that with you. Do you have any reaction to that?
Well, yeah. Spiritual Warrior book is an amazing book. I'm going to tell you a little story about that book. I was kind of struggling financially. At a particular period of time in my life. And I did a project, a writing project for a client where he had a seminar, a self-awareness seminar. And he took the outline for the seminar and brought it to me, and we turned it into a book. And when I got done with that, that was the first time I'd ever done anything like that. And I said to myself, wow, that's a book. I could do that for John Roger. So I sent John Roger an email, and I said, hey, I'm ready to write your next book with you, just like Peter McWilliams, but without the lawsuit. And I know we got to take a break, so I'm going to stop here.
Yeah, stop there, and we'll come back to it. So
right.
We'll be right back with Laren Bright after this break.
Podcast to help you reach your positive potential. HRNradio.com.
Hi there, this is Sally Kirkland back with Laren Bright. We've been talking about a book John Roger wrote called Spiritual Warrior, The Art of Spiritual Living. And you were saying you were...
Yeah,
responding to my little quote.
Wait, yeah. I mean, what I was saying was that at a time when I was going through some financial stress, I had written to John Roger and said that I was ready to write the next book with him, but I mean, to help him on his next book. Because, I mean, John Roger has so much material out there, and putting it together was all in written form. It was all in spoken stuff. And putting it together in written form, you know, was always a project. So anyway, I wrote him this email. 3 weeks later, I'm in the office at on Adams Boulevard, and they said, we have this manuscript, and we'd like you to work on it. And sure enough, it turned out to be a spiritual warrior book. And interestingly, I mean, for whatever it's worth for people that are interested in this kind of stuff, that book went through 7 edits because I would edit it. I'd never edited a book before, so this was a learning experience for me, which is one of the things that John Roger was amazing about, because I think a lot of people did volunteer work for MSIA and ended up being trained through the volunteer work to go into their career.
Right.
I've seen it many, many times, including myself. Anyway, so I edited the book, and then the distributor said, well, you know, this is in really good shape now, but there's a guy, if we can get him to give it a read-through, having his name attached to it will give it more juice. So they sent it to this guy, and he came back with some notes, which was like college education for me watching what this guy did, because he was a known editor. And then, but they gave it back to me and said, okay, make sure that his edits didn't distort the information or the material. So I re-edited that. And then they said, okay, this is just about ready to go. No, you know what? There's these two women. They're just killer editors. And they, you know, if we can get them to do it, then it would be really cool. So they sent the book off to these two women who happened to be nuns. I learned a lot from what they did with the book, and it came back, and then they gave it to me and said, okay, go through this and make sure that the material is still intact. And interestingly, what they had done is they had glommed onto some of the religious stuff. Like there's a part in the book where John Roger had a reference about a paragraph or two about the story of the prodigal son, because he used that as a metaphor for something that a point he was making. And these two women, who, by the way, did not want their name attached to this book because they were nuns, and this is not exactly traditional religion. Anyway, so they had about 5 pages on this prodigal son story, so I had to go and restore the original intention to it. Anyway, I think it was 7 times that the book had gone through edits, and when it came out, it was, I thought, it was really a powerful book. The stuff in there is just amazing.
Well, thank you for your contribution to it, because almost any page you open up to is a gem. Here's a short paragraph I found. Imagine just for a moment that tomorrow is the last day of your life. What feelings does that thought bring up inside you? In order to be a spiritual warrior, from this moment on, you will need to be aware of the possibility and the certainty of death and come to terms with it. And since we don't know the moment we are going to die, so we can forgive ourselves and pray and focus on God at that moment of death, you better start doing it now.
You know, this book, first of all, the whole concept of spiritual, people, in a lot of ways, I think people would tend to think that spiritual and warrior is a contradiction. And the point that J.R. makes in this book is that there are certain qualities that are normally associated with warriors that we get to apply in our own lives in order to really progress spiritually. I mean, I think we all progress spiritually just by living our lives, but there are ways to maximize the speed that we move along our path. And in Spiritual Warrior, J.R. describes a lot of those. I mean, impeccability is one of them. you know, it's like we go for excellence, not necessarily perfection, but we do it with impeccability. And there's another one about, I'm not remembering the word. It's kind of like ruthless. We have to be ruthless, but it's ruthless with ourself and ruthless in our dedication to our spiritual growth, not letting things distract us from that. And there are a lot of things on planet Earth that are here to distract us from that, because it's part of the the process with being on the planet is to have distractions and still learn how to move forward despite the distractions. I mean, I remember reading years and years ago about there was some sect, I think of Buddhists, that they taught meditation, and one of the tests was they had a big, huge bell, and they would lower the bell around somebody who, one of their students who was meditating, and gong the bell, and the person had to hold the focus in the midst of all this huge sound and reverberation going on around them. And I think in a lot of ways that's part of being a spiritual warrior.
I was just thinking of my fast. John Roger told me many years ago, I think I was going through, Epstein-Barr virus and chronic pain syndrome, and a lot of things where my immune system, my health was just shot. And he said, I think you should fast in some way for a month and then eat for a month and then fast for a month. I thought he was crazy, but I'm happy to say I'm on my 25th day of a liquid fast, and it's brought such peace to me. And Laren, I'm somebody who doesn't have physical family, so every time the holidays come around, I go into this, I'm capable of going into this zone where I get really depressed. This Christmas, I'm so happy. I'm so joyful and peaceful, and I think it's because of the ruthlessness of fasting, of not being distracted by food.
Wow. Well, that's really cool.
We're going to take a short break and be right back with you, with Laren Bright. And,
Radio Your Way. HealthyLife.net.
Hi there, this is Sally Kirkland again with Laren Bright, and I've been quoting from a book John Roger wrote called Spiritual Warrior, The Art of Spiritual Living, and Laren's been giving me his take on it. I came to a page where it says correct imagination, and then he says, one very important question to ask yourself is, what is God telling me about this image? Is this image bringing me hatred, yelling, dissension, upset? Is it suggesting quarreling and opinion? If so, you have probably come up against what your ego wants. As a spiritual warrior, you need to get this very clear. If I am with the all, then I'm not in tension or in need. I know I'm with all things. I do not feel lack or pressure. I am poised. I am silent, peaceful. I can deal with any form that comes my way and let it go. I am not bound to anything. This is correct imagination.
That's amazing. I don't even know where to go with that. The whole book. I mean, I almost feel like I'm doing a commercial for
this. It's okay to do a commercial for it.
I'm okay with that. There are so many gems like that. And the thing that's neat about the book also is that there are so many techniques for, not only does John Roger talk about a principle, then he offers techniques for activating those principles in practical ways in our lives. So, you know, I mean, in this correct imagination thing, you know, J.R. says, what pops into my head about that is that John Rogers says, you know, it's a Rorschach world, which to me is like, you know, the world is just what it is, and we place our own interpretations on that. And I would guess that imagining or using our imagination is part of that process of how we define the world to ourselves. And that question that he asked, you know, is the way I'm seeing this or the way I'm imagining this, you know, creating separation inside myself for hatred or anger or anything else. I mean, those are not keystones of the spirit. Those are, well, the way he put it was those, you know, that's pretty much an indication that your ego's stepping forward. You know, and I also want to say quickly that John Roger was not one of these people who says, oh, you got to kill the ego. He says the ego is one of our greatest resources. It's just that we need to use it to support what it is that we want instead of making ego choices and getting invested in having things the way our ego wants. That's another thing in this Spiritual Warrior book. John Roger talks about control, in case any of your listeners might have controlling personalities. I know it's rare, and that was sarcasm.
I was going to say, I hope you're being sarcastic.
Yes, I am. But he talks about control and how to surrender or sacrifice control to the greater good. And it's, I mean, that alone is worth the price of the book, I think.
Yeah. There's another few lines right after that one where he says, this means tuning in so that our minds, our emotions, our imaginations, and our bodies are all present, all focused on the one goal. Then the soul says, it's done. And the mind says, it's done. The emotions say, it's done. And the body says, yes, and takes action.
You know, it's interesting because I don't know what this stuff means to other people, and I just know that what it means to me based on my own experiences, and as I learn and grow in my own experiences, then these same words mean different things to me. So, you know, but aligning body, mind, and spirit to me is one of the most powerful things that we can do to create in the world the things that are in alignment for what it is that we want. And I think that what you just read addresses that, and I think this whole book addresses how to do that.
Right. I'm just going to read a few lines. I wonder if you could talk about when he talks about the left and the right sides. He says, the spiritual warrior walks in openness, learning from both the left and right sides. Mm-hmm. And we learn about the negativity of the left without having to go into its realm to do it. We learn about the right side without falling into self-righteousness and vindictiveness. We walk on both sides of this narrow path, and it is a narrow path. The soul is both male and female, or neither, whichever way you care to look at it. In fact, it's a lot more than both or neither. It is part of divinity. So it's also rocks and trees and ants and snails and water and clouds and snow and rain. Not in their physical form, but in their essence.
You know, I don't know that I'm an expert on this left and right side business, but I can say this. There has to be a balance in life. I mean, in order to be truly fulfilled, I think there has to be a balance in life. And a balance in life means that we have a balance between the positive pole and the negative pole, like on a battery. In other words, in order for a battery to work, you have to have the negative and the positive. If you only had a positive side of the battery, then you would not have any power. And if you only had the negative side, you wouldn't have any power. But together, in balance, the battery with the negative and the positive sides, the battery works. And I feel like that we're in the way that JR defines creation, I guess, is that there are the negative realms and the positive realms, and the negative realms are the physical, the imagination levels, the emotional level, the mental level, the subconscious, unconscious level. Those are all the negative side. Those are all physical, material world. No, I don't know whether they're all in the negative realms of creation. Negative is in polarity, not in negative bad. And then after the subconscious, unconscious level comes the soul levels. And those are the positive sides. The negative levels have karma, and the positive sides, the first levels, is where the no karma begins. And as we walk in the physical material world with a physical body, with mind and emotions and feelings and all this other stuff, we bring that into balance with the spiritual, but we don't forsake the physical or the negative levels. We bring them into balance with the spiritual. And I think that's part of what JR is talking about in this right and left side. And I'll tell you, if you want to, John Roger has literally thousands and thousands of
seminars,
talks, lectures, or seminars, you know, that he's done, recordings. If you go on, there's one, though, that to me is the most awesome of all, at least at this point in my experience of this life. It's called Christ, My Man for Eternity. If you go on www.msi.org and you search for that, he does a talk for about 7-8 minutes, maybe 10 minutes, about the Christ and how it works on the right and left side. And you see, to me, I watch John Roger talk about that, and he's not talking from theory; he's talking from experience, and it's just really powerful. And that's what I got.
What's the name of it again?
Christ, My Man for Eternity.
Christ, My Man for Eternity. I want to get that.
Okay. Yeah, no, it's you can just watch it online. It's not a seminar. It's a moment of peace, actually.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being here, and we'll see you next month, I hope.
I hope so, too, and happy holidays to everybody. Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Yeah.
Like that, yeah.
See you, Sally.
See you.